Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. This is going to be a handmade episode today, and it is brought to you by my fantastic sponsor, El Cajon Harley. El Cajon Harley, get yourself a motorcycle. Don't go anywhere else. Go to Southern California's best motorcycle dealer, El Cajon Harley. I love these guys. The summer's here. You got to get yourself a motorcycle. Do not sleep. Go to El Cajon Harley. They can get you financed. They got used bikes, new bikes. They got the Milwaukee 8 baggers. I love that motor. It's incredible. Go test ride a bike, too. Find out what's good for you. They got the Dynas, Softails, Sportsters, everything in there. El Cajon Harley open 7 days a week. They got some great events coming up. They got the ride to Petco Park in July. And every first Saturday of each month, they got the bikes, bands, and bikinis with a little free barbecue action. Go see my boy Greg Riley and everyone down at the fantastic El Cajon Harley. I love these guys. El Cajon Harley. Also, this episode is brought to you by the great rock and roll sponsor, Earthquaker Devices. If you play a guitar, you need a stomp box. Don't be a fool. Don't be out there. Earthquaker Devices and get yourself a stomp box. Handmade in Akron, Ohio. Boutique pedals that are absolutely fantastic. You got the distortions, phasers, overdrives, shift pitchers. I don't even know what that is. Pitch shifters. I'm just making stuff up. Hopefully they got like some cool T-Wah that sounds like Jerry Garcia. There you go. Get online, follow them on Instagram, and check out all their demonstrations. They got some cool demonstrations. That is earthquakerdevices.com out of Akron, Ohio. Been a sponsor for 3.5 years, and these guys rock and roll. Hit them up. Tell them I sent you. Maybe just get a curly cord or a t-shirt. They got dope-ass shirts. Love both my sponsors. All right, let's get into it today. Handmade episode. You know I love rock and roll photos, and I talk about it a lot. I've had some great photographers on here, and today is no exception. Introduce yourself.
My name is Steve Rose.
Steve Rose, photographer. How are you, buddy?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, man, you've taken some great photos of me, man, at the goddamn comedy jam.
Yep.
Great photos. And I've been on your website numerous times and seen so many cool photos. The incredible one you just gave me of at the drive-in of Cedric jumping off the fucking drums, man. He looks like Batman.
He does, yeah.
Just
awesome.
Flying down. That's a total Batman move. Like he would just, or like one of those Japanese karate films or whatever, just come down. Yah!
Yeah, like a ninja almost.
Too. Yeah, absolutely, man. That was a great show at the drive-in at the Shrine about a month ago, which, by the way, they were playing in Minnesota while I was there. And so I go to sneak attack on them. You know, I'm going to show up at their sound check and just surprise them.
Yeah.
And I get to St. Paul, which is about a 25-minute drive from where I'm at. And I roll up and I'm like, no tour bus. Maybe it's around front. Then I roll up to the front. Nope, no place to park the bus. And then I look up, they're playing the next fucking night.
Oh, no.
I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, my whole surprise attack did not happen. But Maiden was playing right across the street. So I just saw like 4 million dudes walking around. Yeah, you got your Maiden Vans on today. I love the Maiden Vans, man. I got the Number of the Beast ones.
Yeah, those are awesome.
Vans is genius, right?
I love them.
They're the best, man. It's so funny. I had an old pair I just pulled out of the closet. They're the ones with the Velcro straps.
Yep.
And I've been wearing those for like 2 months straight. Like, oh, these are my new favorites again. Just ones that were just sitting in the closet.
Yeah.
What's happening, man? You good?
I'm doing great, yeah.
You're shooting photos like crazy, and I had you, I don't know, we were hanging out a couple weeks ago. You told me some crazy-ass stories. First of all, you give everybody your website so they can look at it while they're listening to this episode.
Sure. The website is steverosephotos.com.
Yeah, excellent. And I had Gabriel on from Echo Park Guitars. You set that up. Thank you so much.
No
what
problem,
a great man. And then Boots Electric.
Yep.
It's talking to him, you told me that great story of how he said he put you on the list. You show up, you weren't on.
He took care of me.
You ran into him in the alley, smoking cigarettes. He went and he told the story too. It was great. He's all, you see this guy? Fucking, he shoots wherever he wants.
Yep, it was so cool.
That's the great access right there. Now, how do you get into rock photography? Because were you always into it? Because me, I fucking go crazy. I had Baron Woolman on here, and to me, he shot some of the most incredible photos of all time of Dan DeGreen and that whole San Francisco scene, you know, of 70s to the 80s. The guy just crushed. He shot Zeppelin on their last show ever in America, and those photos are fucking really iconic, especially the one he was the genius that shot Jimmy Page's guitars just sitting there, everybody else shooting the band. He could walk on the stage back then, you know, back in the old days, you were the photographer. There was no, you know, this fucking horrible shit that happens at shows now. There was none of that. So you just go, I'm the photographer. And they're like, oh, all right, whatever. Just go over there and you could just do whatever you wanted.
Right. And, you know, Baron is one of the photographers that inspires me, and I see his work, and you know that picture he took of Angus at Day of the Green on his back.
I was at that show.
Okay, that's one of my favorites that he's done.
Yeah.
And so what got me into it was just, you know, I've always loved music, and I've gone to a lot of shows, and it just, I took a few pictures with just a point and shoot camera at a show, and I got a lot of good results, like as far as feedback from people who saw the photos, and I thought maybe I'll just pursue this a little, see where it goes.
Were you sneaking in the camera, or
it was just one show? It was a NAMM jam.
Oh yeah,
with a Steel Panther.
Oh yeah,
at the Grove in Anaheim.
What year?
That was 2015.
2015
January. Wow. Yeah.
So you just started, yep, man, which is incredible because your stuff is fantastic. Now you told an amazing story. You were telling me your life is up until you start shooting photos is interesting. You're working at a bank.
Yep.
And you get fucking robbed.
I did, yes.
So now, before we're even into the photos and stuff, where'd you grow up?
Arcadia. Arcadia. St. Gabriel Valley.
So you just fucking living here. You don't know what you want to do for a living.
Exactly.
This is what I love about like the handmade or working for yourself stuff. Like me, comedy, I started at, you know, 44. But you're just kind of bouncing, so you become a bank teller.
Yep.
And a guy comes in and robs you. What happens?
So there were some robberies going on in the area. This is in La Cañada.
Isn't this crazy? Yeah. Like modern day bank robbers.
Right, exactly.
Like, who even thinks you're gonna get away with that, yeah, man?
Well, you never know their situation.
Yeah, I guess.
But
if you need drugs, you gotta get some money.
They don't pay for themselves. So he had gone to a few banks and robbed them successfully before he got to ours. And when there's a robbery in the area, you know, back then they sent out faxes with descriptions and information that could help. So I saw the teller, or I saw the robber, you know, walk in, and he turned the corner, and I was the first teller station, you know, on the corner.
Yeah.
He turns around, he has a shotgun on his shoulder, and puts a shotgun in my head and hands me a bag.
He just walked. Now, you got no bulletproof case or anything?
No, not then. It was more, they wanted to keep like the neighborhood kind of like informal,
yeah,
you know, feel to the branch. And because of that, you know, you end up with a shotgun to your head.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, he just rolls in with it up on the shoulder like, yep, it's the 50s.
Exactly.
Fuck, man. That is crazy. And you got to be shitting your pants.
Yeah. So I had just had a liquor store customer previous to that. And I was over my limit that you're allowed to have up front.
Right.
And
what
so
is the limit?
The limit's 10,000 total.
So you can only have 10,000 in your till.
Yep. And so if you're over that, you're supposed to close up and take, you know, anything over to the back and lock it up. And so I didn't. I just took the next customer. Well, it happened to be him as he turned the corner.
Right.
And so he, you know, he gave me the bag and asked for all the money. And
he say to you? Like, money, motherfucker?
No. He handed me the bag and he said, fill it up.
Wow, that's it? He was just mellow?
Yeah, well, you got to figure, he wants to get out of there as much as you want him out of there.
Right, but he's not screaming or anything?
No, he was very mild-mannered, just aside from the shotgun to my head, but yeah.
Anybody else seeing it?
No, they were all helping their own customers. So when I came to them, because he told me to get everyone else's money too.
Yeah.
So I woke up to them with a bag. They think I'm joking. And I point to the guy with the shotgun, and they all freeze.
Right.
You know, they start just dropping money in, and I go to every teller.
But once you're at another teller, can't you just fucking boogie? Like, fuck you, man.
Yeah, well, then you know, it's a different situation at that point. Okay. You know?
Well, it ain't your banker money, so fuck it.
Right,
just
yeah.
Give him the shit, right?
There's also no glass, and you're not really protected.
Yeah, I get it.
So I hand him the money. He looks in the bag, and he walks out. But what he didn't know is I didn't give him all I had, because if I did, I would have lost my job. And that's what I was more concerned about, was
hilarious.
Job security than...
I would have given him all the money.
Yeah.
And then said, meet me later, dude. You owe me a drink.
Exactly.
Hey, my rent's due, too, dude. Cut me in. You know, like winked at him.
Yep.
So does he get away?
He left the branch. We immediately shut it down. The manager calmed, you know, the customers inside down. We waited for the FBI to show up, and then they interviewed all of us. And it turns out once he left the bank, he went down the street, broke into someone's house. A woman was there. He tied her up and stole her car, and that was his getaway.
Wow.
So shortly after this, they aired this footage on America's Most Wanted, you know, trying to get the word out to catch him. And he eventually was caught.
Yeah.
A few months later on.
And you were on there, right?
Yeah, they showed the surveillance footage of me being robbed.
Hilarious. Yeah. You got that as a YouTube clip?
Not yet.
You should put that on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's fucking hilarious, man. Now, no security guard working there?
He was on his break and napping in his car.
What? Napping in his car?
Well, and if he was, it wouldn't have mattered, because at that branch, some banks, they don't prefer to have armed security. Others do. I guess the statistics show that if you have an armed security guard, the chances are higher that there will be more violence.
Oh, wow.
And it may not be, you know, they're taking out the robber. It could be innocent people involved as well.
Well, any security guard I've ever seen is the biggest piece of shit ever. Yeah. I mean, they're like fucking playing video games. They're texting. They weigh like 690. They're talking to like girls that are not even in their league. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
hey,
how you doing? You know, they're like out of their minds, man. And it's like, what are you even here? They're just there for looks, you know. But if I was a guy and I was you know, scoping a joint out, I'd go, this guy, I just fucking take him out immediately with a thunk to the head, you know, with the gun butt. So you're working there, and then what? You're like, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Yeah, well, I lasted a couple more years.
Yeah,
but I realized, you know, I'm not going to be a teller forever.
Yeah.
You know, at that time, I still am. I was into gear and guitar, so I went to go work for Guitar Center.
So you start working at Guitar Center, and you worked here at the one up the street from my house. What's it like to work for Guitar Center? I've actually never talked to anybody really what that's like. I was always a big Guitar Center fan growing up when I was young, because they had so much great shit. But then later on, they seemed to have completely went stale. They were like really cutting edge. Sam Ash to me was always kind of like, this is, you know, corporate and weak. And Guitar Center felt rock and roll, you know, especially that Hollywood one with Drew Belzer and those guys. The Burst Brothers were working there, and they had that incredible vintage back room. And just everybody there was way into it. And early on when I was young, I'd go to the one in San Fran on Mission Street, and they had the Charvels, man, back then when no one had them. So it was like, holy shit, you know? So what year are you working there? Like,
I worked there in 2002.
So it was kind of like, it's still kind of good then.
It was good because it wasn't, because they went private, and then Bain Capital bought them and then took them public and made it more corporate than anything else.
Right.
And I mean, now they're having a hard time staying open.
Read, man, there's something like $7 billion in debt or something.
Yeah.
Some astronomical number, man. Like, ridiculous number, to where you're like, well, they'll be gone.
Yeah.
Which is pretty sad, you know, because some of those Guitar Centers are so iconic. That Hollywood one, I can't imagine if it's gone. If that's gone, that's another fucking thing gone from the Strip. You know what I mean?
Definitely. And that Hollywood store is so big, it's its own district. Like, that one store is its own district. It's crazy.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yep.
Well, you know what they could do is they could go mail, you know, like, I mean, Musician's Friend is what they say is wiping them out. You know, but they could do that, Guitar Center, and then just have like two or three super cool iconic stores, like Hollywood, maybe one in New York, San Fran, you know, and then just be online, you know?
Yeah.
Like this one over here where I live is, it's just fucking like dated. I go in there, I'm like, you got nothing. And none of the new Martins. Like, you know, like I go to the NAMM show and I see great shit, and then it's never at the stores. Mm-hmm. You know, like Wild West Guitars out in Riverside. That fucking place is one of the best stores ever. They're smoking GC, and that's what GC was all about. They used to have the crazy high-end guitars, like the Murphy Pauls, the Jackson Randy Rhodes models, you know, even like high-end Martins, like the really ornate, you know, the one with all the abalone, like D45s and shit.
Right.
They don't have any of that shit anymore. It's just a bunch of entry-level shit, which I'm sure is because nobody's buying it, you know?
And I think that maybe their reputation, you know, in the marketplace is such that they're not getting opportunity to get those kind of instruments because they know they won't move them.
Yeah, is it politics and ordering? Like Martin's like, you know, we're not going to give you these D45s because they'll sit around and it makes us look bad.
Or maybe they'll get them, but they'll go to the stores that they know will move them, like Hollywood or, you know, depending on where that market is.
You know, the Hollywood store is so fucking good. They got the big acoustic room. They got the big vintage room. They've got the high-end guitar room. Man, you go in that one where you turn right there behind the bass department. It's all relics, and it's just fucking good. That's how you do a store, you know? It drives butts in there, you know, because people go in, and they go, I can't afford this. And next thing you know, they leave with it, you know?
Yeah, well, so when I worked there, I was the operations manager. So I worked at Sherman Oaks. I started in Covina, and I also worked at Hollywood.
Wow.
And part of the operations is you do inventory. So I had to scan every single guitar in that vintage room.
Wow.
So that's pretty nerve-wracking that you know, you're holding $30,000 vintage Fender.
Yeah.
You don't want to drop it.
That was an interesting era too, because you know, GC and I talked to Norm about it, Norm's Rare Guitars, and also Mark, and I saw it early on because I used to flip vintage gear, you know. And those guys were inflating the market. It was hilarious. They would have like a guitar, like a, let's say a 59, you know, Gibson TV special. And those were like $3,500 all the time for a good clean one. And all of a sudden you go in there and they'd have them for $7,500 and you're going like, what? And then people around America are like, oh, I guess these are going for $7,500 now. It's like, no, they're not. But nobody was paying that. So it fabricated this. It made this vintage market, fake vintage market of like, oh, these guitars are worth like $80,000, you know. They are high dollar guitars. Like, you know, a Blackguard at the time was $40,000 and they would have them for $80,000. You know, they would just double everything. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, fuck it. If you want it, you got to pay. So you work at Guitar Center for a while. How long are you there?
About 2 years.
About 2 years. And what makes you leave there?
I just got sick of dealing with the politics of, you know, and
right. Kind of politics in there.
Just they cared more about, you know, because I was in operations. So that's going to be more of like HR stuff and inventory. And they cared more about sales. And, you know, I was like, you can't do this or that because it's breaking, you know, this rule.
Right.
I said, well, yeah, but it's Memorial Day. We got to sell these guitars. We're going to do this or this. So it's just, you know, it's. And I get it. Sales obviously keep the stores open, but inventory keeps the gear there. And it was like that battle of understanding those two things.
Yeah, it's interesting. I sold motorcycles for years. And, you know, when you're working for commission only, it is fucking horrible because you start to feel like a little evil. Sales just feels evil. It's just weird. Even if you're completely legit, straight up to the person, they think you're lying.
Yeah.
So you just kind of, it's a lose-lose, you know? It's like, no, man, this is for real. My boss, you know, I can't go any lower. And they're like, yeah, right. I know you can. I was, you know, such and such. And sales can be really weird because you could be killing it and make, like, fortunes. And the other people are in there are hourly. And so they hate you.
Right.
But they don't want to do sales. You're like, hey, you could do sales too. And they're like, no, I just want to be hourly and sit on my ass, but I want your money.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you want my money, but you won't come here 7 days a week.
And work holidays.
And stay till fucking 9:45 when everybody else went home at 6 and hear the bullshit guy of like, oh, can I see the blue one again? I don't know, black one? Let me call my wife. My wife says she wants red. You got red? We don't have fucking red. Oh, I'm going to come back later. It's like, fuck you, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, it's always weird when there's half the people at the store are hourly and half are on sales, you know? Mm-hmm. Did you ever get into the sales or no?
No, I at times if I'd be on the floor and people would have questions, you know, I knew enough about gear that I could help answer their question.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I would just send them to a salesman, you know, who would end up closing the deal.
Yeah, someone cool that you liked.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there were a few cool and some characters as well. You know, you get that for
sales. Yeah.
The best one I had was I had a guy who called in sick on his day off.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was off. He called me. He's like, hey, I'm not going to be able to make it. I was like, you're off today. He's like, oh, well, all right. I'll see you later.
Oh, hilarious. Yeah. What a stoner. Doesn't even know his schedule.
Yeah, it was the best.
What kind of people work at Guitar Center? Of course, a lot of musicians, right?
Yep.
And did you ever hear like stuff like, well, I won't be here much longer anyway because my band's getting a record deal.
There was a lot of that. Yeah. And even in like, it's a small market, like when I worked in Covina, where you don't get a, you know, you wouldn't think there was a lot of that. It was like, oh, or people would be in like the pro audio room,
yeah,
like mixing their CD or working on their own private stuff instead of like helping customers because they knew they had the downtime and they could like make it work.
That's hilarious, yeah, man. Yeah, Guitar Center, you know, interesting. Like I said, I really love the store. They've been around forever, and it would be sad for them to go away, you know. But I do think that they need someone to come in and kick ass and make it cool again.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. It's just not cool. You go in, it's just like, welcome to Guitar Center. And it's just all this garbage on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the garbage is all that sells, you know.
It's cheap.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. So you're there a couple years, and then you go and shoot the NAMM show. Are you going to NAMM show because of Guitar Center at the time?
At the time, I had gone a couple years when I was there, you know, each January.
Yeah.
And it was great. You know, at that point, I was hooked. But then after that, I was out of, like, the music business, so I wasn't able to go to a few. And then, you know, in 2013, I started working for a publication that handled, like, gear and stuff like that, and I would do photographs for them.
Oh wow.
So then I started to go then.
Right.
And then in 2015 is when I got to go and go to the NAMM Jam. And then I wasn't at that point I wasn't like given a photo pass or anything like that. I just brought in a point and shoot.
Right.
And so from the crowd or the pictures I took, and they were comparable to whatever anyone was shooting in the pit. And so I felt like, okay, maybe I have an eye for this. Because I have no training. Like I've never taken a photo class or anything like that. It's all self-taught.
Yeah.
And just like with playing music, I taught myself to play guitar, taught myself to play drums, things like that, where I just, if I'm passionate about it, I'll just devote all my time to it.
Yeah, yeah. I could easily do rock photography because I understand the shots to get, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of people, they don't have the, if you don't play music or if you haven't been around music, you don't know what you're shooting. You don't just shoot a guy standing there with a guitar. It's very key shots, you know? And when you look at some of the greatest rock photography, let's say some Baron Woman or Marshall, you know, when you look at their photos, it's that key shot, something happened, and you're like that shot of Cedric jumping off the amps, you know? It's like, You know, there's some photos like Angus laying on the ground, like we're saying. You know, they just tell the story. And there's that fantastic photo that I forget who shot it, but I was at Baron's book signing. And there's a huge photo of Elton John. And the guy shot it over his shoulder. He's at Dodger Stadium in the 70s.
Yeah.
And he's wearing like Dodger outfit.
Yep.
And you just see Dodger Stadium. And that just tells you right there what the whole thing is. You know what I mean? It's so cool.
Yeah, it's about capturing moments that you won't see again.
Yep, yep.
And that's the tough part. And that's what I love about it is that challenge. Because nowadays for photography or for concert photography, you know, you've got anywhere between 5 and 20 people in a pit.
Yeah.
And you can only shoot 3 songs and everyone's looking at the same thing. So what will you do? What angle will you get to make your shot stand out and not look like everyone else's?
That's where Baron killed it with that Day on the Green, because with Zeppelin, there's a million Zeppelin photos, million from that shot. I think like, you know, maybe 20 different guys shot it or whatever. But when you see the one photo of just Jimmy's guitars before they're on, you know, they walk the guitars out and they get them acclimated to the weather. That's mm-hmm. what they always yep. do. So they yeah. tune up and everything. And there they were sitting. And not only is it one of the coolest photos, but you realize that's Jimmy's arsenal right there. You get, because you only see him always with the Les Paul. But there it was. It was the Walnut Telly. Mm-hmm. The Les Paul one. And a lot of people don't know he had Les Paul number two. Then there's the D18 acoustic, the D21, the Dan Electro, and you know, and then the weird red Les Paul that had like a B bender. So you're starting to see this shit, and you're going like, "Wow, man, fucking he had all his guitars on tour. I never knew that. You yep. know, and I always thought it was just two guitars. You know,
yeah.
And so that photo to me tells so much stories. There's tons of great photos out there over the era. And these rock guys really learn. And I realized once one thing for me shooting with my phone, my camera, it's all about shooting. You have to constantly be shooting, you know, not to miss that shot. You know, you'll Definitely. Have like 400 photos yeah. and five are great.
Yep.
But you got the five. If you're not shooting the whole time you're in there for the three songs, you're dumb. You right. know, like when I went and shot the Great White Sharks, Dean Carr, an incredible photographer who I had on here, his photos are electric.
Yep.
And he and I and Ewing, who is also a great photographer for the Sharks team and Great White Sharks, we were in the cage the whole time. People get out, they eat lunch, they fucking nap, they smoke cigarettes, they drink beer. We're out there for 5 days. We're in those fucking cages. 6 a.m., the light comes up. You're like, cage. You know what yeah. I mean? And that's how you're going to get these electric shots of anything you're shooting, you know, sporting events or whatever. That great Pele shot where he's doing the bicycle kick.
Yeah.
The guy was firing away, definitely.
You've got to.
Yeah.
Because you never know. Like, there are times where I'll get home from a show, and I won't, like, there'll be a shot that's my favorite shot, and I didn't even realize I got it till I'm yeah. looking, you know, at what I've actually got for that night.
Yeah, yeah. When I was a kid, I snuck a camera into the Stones on the Tattoo U down my pants. And I got a photo of Keith Richards. This is 81. And he's pointing at me. I don't know if he's going, camera up there, mate, snuck one in, yeah. or if he's just like, fuck yeah, you rock and roll. But he's 5 feet away from me. I'm in the front row, you yeah. know, and I got the greatest photo ever, you know, and it's on a fucking Instamatic, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, back then you only had like 21 photos or whatever.
Yeah, you had to make them count.
You better make them yeah. count. So you weren't just blasting away. You'd be like, fuck, I got a shit one. Right when he looked at you, he turned. I got a yeah. bunch. I got a fucking crate full of turned. You know what I mean? Yeah. Hey, here's a good one of Jagger's shoulder.
Yep.
It's fucking crazy. So you shoot Steel Panther, and who sees him? How do you show people and get up and running?
So I put him up on that site that I was covering the gear for.
Uh-huh.
Friends see them and they said, you know, they're like, wow, you took that? And I was like, yeah.
What camera were you using?
I was using just a Canon point and shoot, a Rebel.
Right.
Like a $500 Canon.
Yep.
And I realized, you know, after that, like, I should look into this. And then I start researching gear and techniques and, you know, all of that. And so my show after that, my first official show was Cannibal Corpse.
And this is the big, big, big question I wanted to ask you.
Yep.
How do you begin shooting? Like, how do you get into the camera pit, the photo pits?
So the key thing for to get a photo pass,
yeah,
is you need to have an outlet you're shooting for and get in touch with the publicist.
Right.
And
how do you get this info, like the publicist and stuff?
So oftentimes it'll be on like the band's website, you know, under contact, or you could search for it. It'll be there.
Yeah.
And if not, you just search for the band and then publicist, and you can work through it. And, you know, sometimes they may not be the current publicist, so I kind of click through and make sure that whatever they're promoting of that artist is like the most recent or current stuff, so I know that they're working with them currently. And or you can go through the band's management. But for the most part, I go through the publicist.
Right.
And they want to know, you know, with the show and who you're shooting for.
Yeah.
And then they evaluate the requests they get to see if the outlet is big enough, if it even matters to them, if they just want to have someone there to capture it that they can, you know, maybe, you know, use that.
Yeah, because it seems like people would just be like, I want to shoot the band.
Right, and there's a lot of that.
And just show up.
Yep.
Yeah, who doesn't want to shoot the band? Yeah. Who doesn't want to be in the front row for three songs? A lot of times, that's all I need to be there for a band.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Three songs in the front row, fake camera, sounds good to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And then the thing that I'm noticing more now is people with photo passes, but they're there with iPhones or iPads.
Wow.
And it's the problem for me is, there are probably good photographers who didn't get approved, so right. This person could get approved with an iPhone. But then again, you never know who they know. Maybe right. They're a relative or someone of the band.
I got photo passes for Coachella back in the day when it was loose.
Yep.
And that was just a great way to be front row.
Yeah.
They're like, here, we got you deluxe. But I did shoot photos while I was there, and I got some of the most screaming photos ever of like the yeah, yeah, yeahs. You know, Wolf Mother when they first came over on the first record, The Cure. I shot some great fucking photos, yeah. You know? But yeah, I get it, right? Somebody's in there and they're like, this guy's not even a photographer.
Right.
You know, he's just one of the, you know, tour manager got him a photo pass.
Exactly.
Get out of my hair. Here. This is, we can't get you a seat because all the seats are sold now. What people don't know about concerts is Live Nation bids for the tour. So they go, we'll give you $7 million for this tour. But you, as a band, have no free tickets because, you know, they're paying you a flat rate.
Yeah.
So then the tour manager's like, here's a photo pass. Just, you know, blend in and walk around, you know?
Yep.
So that, I see that happening.
And then another thing to know, for the most part, just you're not going to get paid to be there. You know, usually your payment is the ticket. The cost of the ticket is going to be the payment for a photographer.
Right.
Unless you're there, like the outlet you're shooting for is paying you.
Yeah.
You know, like I also shoot for Golden Voice. So they pay me to go to the shows. Or if you don't have to sign like a crazy release, you then have the option to then sell your photos if people want to buy them or things like that.
So why would you shoot the band if you are not able to sell them and you don't have an outlet? Just to keep practicing?
Well, if you don't have an outlet, it's going to be hard to get approved to shoot.
Gotcha. And who is your outlet?
So I have a few. So if I shoot, and the one thing I do for my outlets is I never have an outlet in California.
Oh yeah.
Because this way, when a band comes to California, I'm the guy they have to come to or that they'll use to shoot those bands. So I can kind of.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah.
So the place is like, let's say in Chicago.
Yep.
And they go, we need photos of the Grateful Dead. You know, so you're the guy then.
Yeah, because I'll be their LA right. contact.
Instead of like people that are here and like, you know.
Because then everyone's going to want it.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Like, you know, BAM, let's say back in the day, BAM magazine. It's like we all shoot for BAM. We only can have one guy.
Right.
Gotcha.
So like for like the jam band stuff, like for the Dead, that outlet's based in New York. For metal stuff, the outlet I use is in Canada.
Right.
So then I know I'm golden here. Like when I've shot Metallica, it's been for them. And then I'm the only one who's going to, you know, have this territory.
Right. Wow. So you get up and running. Your first is Cannibal Corpse.
Yep.
And you don't have an outlet at the time, right?
At the time, I ran it through that same gear site I did for Steel Panther.
Yeah.
But I also knew Alex Webster from Cannibal Corpse. I'd met him after a show. We'd talked and I'm emailing. So I was able to email him and say, hey, you know, can I get a photo pass? This is where I'm going to run the coverage.
Yeah.
And no problem. He took care of me.
Wow.
So first time, you know, in a pit was Cannibal Corpse, you know, and then it's making sure you can get shots of the band because, you know, for death metal, you know, it's moving, but then also dealing with people coming over the top and kick you in the head because,
yeah.
You know, they're moshing. And
first song too. It's yeah. really the adrenaline song.
Exactly.
Let's show these guys we can fucking pit.
Yeah. So then what you do with beforehand, what I do is I make friends with the security guards. So they know what I'm there for. They know that I'm like just here to do my job and get
yeah.
out. And they
yeah,
kind of watch
like
out for you.
That's like what we did at Mastodon at Amoeba.
Yep. Exactly.
You just start talking to the guy so he's not like, move.
Right.
And once you talk to him, you go, oh, that's a dope shirt. You know?
Yeah.
There's all kinds of tricks.
Exactly.
Killer shirt, dude. Man, I love this place, you know? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, man. Hey, stand over here. You need some earplugs? You know what
yep,
I mean?
Exactly. That's exactly
what,
you what
went down there, yeah. you know? Yeah, man. Now when I see that guy at all the events, he's super cool to me.
Yeah, well, you worked it well, too. When I watched you go through it and just,
yeah,
it
yeah.
was smooth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a, you know, you don't get places in this business by being a dick.
No.
Because the dick to dick they're going to win because they love their little 10 minutes of power, mm-hmm. and they are not going to let you win in their 10-minute world.
Definitely, yeah.
So you shoot Cannibal Corpse, and how does that come out? Do the photos look good? You're still with your Rebel, right?
Still with the Rebel, and I thought they did fine. You know, after every show, even now, I'm always learning something.
Yeah.
Because the environment's never going to be the same. The venue is going to be different. What the artists want as far as lighting or where they're going to be set up is going to be different. So even if it's a venue that I've shot multiple times, it's always something different that night, which is, it always keeps me on my toes and I'm always getting better and learning, which is great.
Well, the key thing about rock photography is all three shitty things for photography. It's dark.
Yep.
They're moving like motherfuckers. And then there's bright lights.
Yep.
So you're battling super dark and bright lights and movement. And that's all means spells blurry in the photo world,
yep.
you know? So how do you start learning? Because the particular photo, like there's a great one of me you took where I'm on stage, I'm rocking, you know, like they're full rocking photos and there's zero blur. That photo is Cedric jumping. I sent it to the band and they were just like, wow, that's fucking great. But how do you start to learn to shoot and not get any blur? Is it the equipment? Is it the shutter speed, of course, and all that? But how do you learn that stuff?
It's learning your camera. It's going to be the settings within the camera. And again, I've had a number of bad shots, but then I'll either correct it on the fly or I'll learn. So for the next show, I'm always going to improve that.
Right.
But yeah, it's just time in the field.
Are you YouTubing that?
When I was getting started, definitely right. learning just about, you know, on YouTube about concert photography, you know, what kind of settings to kind of start out with, what to like.
And what are like the settings if people are like thinking about shooting some photos? First of all, can you do it with a Rebel forever or are you upgraded equipment? Of course, what do you got, like a 7D or something?
No, I've got a 5D and a 6D.
Yeah.
Both full frame. You can easily use a point and shoot. And for me, I just wanted to have, you know, the best gear I could have so I wouldn't outgrow it.
Yeah.
You know, and for what I have now, it suits me great. As far as settings, what I started with was the first few shows, I started in an aperture mode.
Yeah.
And so two of the three things, which is going to be aperture, ISO, and shutter speed will all be, those are the three things you've got to worry about.
Right.
And so two of the three are taken care of, then I have to just worry about the aperture and adjusting that.
Aperture is the lighting?
Aperture is going to be... like what's going to be focus versus blurry, depth of field.
Oh, I got you. I got you. Like what you want in focus compared to out of focus.
Yeah, and it just that'll be determined by your depth of field.
Right.
So if it's, you know, for me, I shoot normally in 2.8 and just leave it open. So that means there's going to be blurry behind the subject. You know, you can dial it in and go like 7.1. Like when I shot Slash, that was 6.3 to 7.1. And you get a lot of things, you know, everything will be in focus behind it too, more than just the primary subject you're shooting.
Right, right. Now, once you get into the other cameras, do you realize, are you shooting in RAW?
Yeah.
You shoot all
RAW.
Stuff in RAW?
Everything's in RAW.
Wow, so giant files.
Yep.
And how many photos do you usually shoot in the three songs?
It depends on the artist or, you know, because I'm using two cameras at the same, you know, so... I'll have one lens, it's going to be a 2470, another one 7200. So generally, 2470 will be full band, 7200 will be individual band members or drummer to get back to reach the drummer.
Right.
And so after a show, maybe 500-600.
Wow.
Within that time.
And how many do you think you get out of there, like 20?
So no, so of the 500-600, I'll probably get 40 that I would say are okay, and then I pare it down to, you know, 20 to 30, 25 at most that I think we're going to be that I can send to any outlet who I'm shooting for.
And then once you get them on the online, you're just tweaking them and shit.
Yeah. So I only use Lightroom for my editing.
Yeah.
I don't use Photoshop because I feel like you can, it's great for those that use it and they do it well. For me, I feel like depending on how extreme you want to get, it could be inauthentic to the shot you've taken, you know, cause you can clean this up and take this out or add this. And I don't know Photoshop. I know in Lightroom it's minimal. You adjust highlights and contrast and
right.
and
it's like an Instagram filter.
Exactly. You know, and so it keeps me honest because it's real to what I was able to shoot.
Because you don't know how to do Photoshop.
Exactly. Yeah.
You can learn that though on YouTube.
You can, yeah. But yeah. I don't I feel like I'm doing pretty well with this and
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, once you get up and running, how many bands sign off and say you can sell photos?
It's not that they sign off that I can sell it. They don't make me sign a waiver that I can't.
So how many bands out of all the bands you shoot make you sign a waiver? Is it 50-50?
It's about that. And for some artists, it's I can only run the photos on the outlet that was approved for.
Right.
I can't use them in my portfolio.
Oh, wow.
I can't do this. Others, they want to see all the photos before I even run them, and they'll let me know what's approved.
Checking double chins.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, double chin check.
Yeah.
It's so many photos of me. I'm like, oh, thanks. Thanks for that. That's all you could get, huh? You're definitely a terrible photographer. There's nobody wants a triple chin.
No. You know
what I mean? It's unless I'm doing that as a bit.
Right.
And I still don't want that photo out there. You know?
Exactly. So
you're better off just losing weight because they're going to fuck you. You know what I mean?
Well, and my thing is I'm trying to make them look good because it'll make me look good and they'll want to work with me again. So I'm not going to look for those shots, or I wouldn't include those to begin with because it doesn't help either of us.
Now, how many shows have you shot, you think?
So let's see here. And so when I got started in 2015, I did Cannibal Corpse, I did Ani DiFranco, and I did Heart. And I took a break for a couple of months just because I was busy with work and stuff. And then after that, I picked it up and I did a few to close out the year. The highlight for me of that year was being when I shot Slash.
Oh, yeah. At his house?
No. He was at Pechanga.
Oh, wow.
And so,
with the snake pit man?
The conspirators.
Oh, yeah.
With Miles Kennedy.
Yeah, okay.
And so for that show, this is another thing to consider when you're requesting for a photo pass is know the venue, because everyone requested to shoot it at the Palladium.
Right.
Which would have been great. But then, you know, LA is a pretty big media market.
Especially
so,
for Slash.
Yeah. So everyone's going to request that. So I requested Pechanga, because who's going to want to drive out to Pechanga?
Yeah.
I was the only photographer at that show.
Wow.
Yeah. And because of that, I'm the only one who has the pictures of that show. But I had to sign a pretty strict waiver that I couldn't sell it, because the following morning I was getting hit up they wanted to buy shots from the show, fans who saw it, and I couldn't sell them.
Wow.
You know, because I, as much as I'd like to make a couple of bucks here and there, I don't want to break that relationship that I'm established.
Of course. You know,
because that's more important.
Absolutely. You need to work in the business.
Exactly.
And
so I have to tell people, you know, oftentimes, like, I can't sell these. These aren't, you know, I'm not allowed to. And then sometimes the ones I am able to sell, it's fine, you know, because you can make a little off of it as well.
Now, are you doing this full time as a job now?
Yeah.
And how long did it take you to work before you were doing it full time?
I just started a few months ago to go full time.
Wow.
And so going back to as far as shows I shot, so I did maybe 20 the first year. I did 37 last year, and I'm at 42 this year.
Wow.
So I've got a lot going so far this year.
Do you only shoot bands that you like?
No.
Oh, wow.
I for the most part, I try to. Or I'll shoot bands that I think will help my exposure.
Yeah.
And or that I think, you know, are a name. It may not be music for me, but I know it'll matter to a lot of people.
Right. Now, how are you making money?
So I'll make money so right now it'll be through, you know, the shows I get through Golden Voice.
Yeah.
It'll be bands have hired me to shoot their shows, to shoot them, and then I'll license images to magazines, or recently I just closed a deal with a Smithsonian. They're putting out a book of like the history of rock and roll from 1950-ish up until now, and they bought a picture of mine that I took of Adele, and they wanted to run that in their book.
Wow.
So I licensed that.
What's that? What kind of money is that?
It depends on the outlet and what they'll pay or what they're using it for. So the initial run for the book is, you know, it was like $500.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and cool. Upwards. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, you ever sell your photos in these galleries? But, you know, there's that rock photography shop place on Sunset.
Yep.
I did an interview there with Baron, and they got some of the greatest rock photos ever in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ever, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I went to Sebastian's house, and he's got that giant Eddie Van Halen from the Fair Warning tour.
Right.
He's playing the striped star guitar. He's got the jumpsuit on, and the fucking Japanese Velcro sneakers with the W. And it's just, there it is, man. That's fucking fair warning, you mm-hmm. know, right in front of you.
Yep.
That those kind of photos, man, to me, like Neil Zalzar or whatever, that's yep. his name. You got to think about some of these guys that shot some of the greatest all time. Like Neil shot all those great Van Halen photos and Zeppelin in 75 at the Forum. Those are fucking, you know, iconic concerts. And it's great because I was talking to Baron. He goes, I don't remember one show because he's just shooting. He's not listening at all.
Same thing, yeah, for me. Yeah. I don't, the three songs, I don't know what I'm, like, I have to go back and see what they played because I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
Because I'm so focused on getting the shot that it's just, I block everything out.
Now, let's get into this a little bit. When you're shooting, they let you shoot for three songs, and most of the time, do you have to leave or do they let you stay?
It depends on if they've given you a ticket.
Right.
And then it also depends if they make you check your equipment.
Right.
So most of the time I'm able to stay, but I often don't stay long because I want to get home and work on it. Because I think a lot of what helps me in what I've done is as soon as I get home, I start going through the photos and I might be up until 2 or 3 in the morning and then I'll send them off to the outlet. But I just know I'm the first one out with the coverage.
Yeah.
So if the band wants to use it or publicist or anyone, the photos are there for them to use.
Yeah. Now you were shooting the Dead & Co. We were both there.
Yep.
And at the Hollywood Bowl, you can't shoot in the front row because that's where the fans are. It's a weird situation. That venue is called the Pool.
Yep.
And that's where all the high dollar seats are. So you shoot at the soundboard. That's got to be difficult, right?
It is, because it helps if you have a long lens, which I now have a long lens to get at least a better shot of like an individual shot of the artist. But you're not going to get a lot of variety because everyone's shooting from there. You're so far away. You can only get so much.
Yeah.
And it's tough when you get soundboard shots. Like I've had, so the Bowl is soundboard. The Greek Theater is soundboard depending on the artist, but it looks like more and more it's going to be soundboard. Staples Center is, it varies, but the last time I shot there, it was soundboard. So it's really tough to do that because it hinders what you can do as a photographer with your creativity. But if you're a publicist, you're not thinking of that. You're just saying, all right, we're going to give access. They'll get whatever they can get, you know, and they don't think beyond the artistic like approach to it.
So at Dead & Co, you bought a ticket and stayed, right?
Yeah. Well, the outlet gave me a ticket.
Oh, they gave you, they ended up giving me one.
Yep. They did.
That was a weird show because you were there and I was there and that weird bomb threat went down and they didn't say one fucking thing about it. Did you ever hear anything about it? I didn't.
Yeah. I got the next day, the outlet that I shot for ran the coverage and put a little thing about a bomb threat. And the publicist reached out to me and sent me the actual like press release of what it was.
But what was it?
Say like a rumored bomb threat. They had to obviously take it seriously. So they got the band off. That's why the dogs were on stage. They checked it and then they've determined it was, you know, just fake. But the police weren't even called out. So it wasn't that like...
It was scary as fuck.
Oh,
though,
definitely.
Because there we are watching Dead & Co., And it was fresh from what that concert
in
had
Manchester.
Just happened. Yeah, Manchester had just happened. It was like 2 days before. And so there you are. You're at a concert. And I was in the front row. You were texting me like, what's going on?
Yep.
But I never forgot it. Just these guys in black suits come walking out. And I thought they were going to play horns or something.
Oh, okay.
I go... Because they walked right on stage. And I go, oh, this must be some guest horn people I've never seen. Right. I'm waiting for them to go like Jimmy Jam and John John here on harp and flute. You know what I mean? That's what I'm waiting for, you know. And they just walked up, whispered in the ears. I've never seen anything like that. It was insane how fast they put their instruments down and walked single filely the fuck out of there.
Yep.
And I was like, whoa, what was that? And the guy next to me was like, that ain't good. And I was like, yeah. And they're not saying anything. So if there was a bomb, we're all dead.
Right.
They didn't say like, looks like there might be a bomb here. We got to check it out. Because people would have been the fuck.
Yeah.
They would have been stomping each other.
Yep.
But those dogs walked on about 5 feet from me. And I go, oh, this is a fucking bomb threat. Mm-hmm. You know? And I saw the bomb dogs earlier in line.
Yeah, they now circle the venues ahead of time because I'm often there early and I see them circling. And it's just, it's weird that that's where we have to be now.
It's fucked.
You know, and at the show, I know people who left the show and didn't come back. They figured it was
my whole row.
Yeah.
Remember, I go, oh man, too bad you couldn't get down here because I've got the best seats in the house and there's no one in my row.
You know, and the guy next to me was contemplating going over the hill in the back to climb down. And I was like, just wait and see what, like,
because
you never know what, if there was a bomb, you don't know what the end game is. Do they do it at the exits to get people, or is it going to be
on the hill there or whatever? You know, man,
it's weird that you have to think about that now.
It's so weird.
Yeah, back then the biggest issue was, where did I park my car?
Yeah, you know? I've been to a couple thousand shows, and the only bomb I was seeing was, you know, like some joints, big bombers rolling around that you shouldn't smoke because you're fucked up, man. Now, you big Dead guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long you been a Dead guy?
It's recent. Maybe.
Me too.
5 years or so.
Yeah, me too.
So.
Like, I always loved Working Man's Dead. Like, I talked to Maron about it early on, but I grew up in San Fran, and I was like, fuck all that. But, you know, more and more now, I feel, I tweeted out, I'm 51, and I'm a full-on Deadhead now. So, yeah, midlife crisis is real.
Yeah.
You know? But really what it is I think it's just with so much fucking chaos going in the world that I need that music in me, you know what I mean? That just fucking relaxes me, gets my mind in the right spot, you know?
Definitely.
And, especially spending a lot of time in Boulder over the last 5 years and in Denver and doing comedy. That's got a very, very zen vibe out there. A heavy Dead scene. I saw the Dead there last year. What a great spot. I'm going to see the Dead this Saturday at Mets Stadium.
City Field.
City Field, yeah. So I think it's just something I need now, you know. But you did get some great photos of them. You shot them indoors last time, right?
Yeah, so I shot them three times. The first was when they first got started at the end of 2015, they did the two nights at the Forum, New Year's, the 30th and the 31st.
Yeah.
And they didn't have, for the Dead, if there's ever two nights, they never have photographers the second night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, you know, unless you're Jay Blakesberger or someone.
Right, right.
You know,
I spoke to him quite a bit on a podcast. He was great.
He's awesome. So when I shot Trey with his solo band, I reached out to Jay and I sent him my photos if he could critique them. You know, I asked him if he would do that for me. And he's like, these look great. The only thing I would suggest is send me your only your best. If it's 8, if it's 10, that's all I want to see. I don't want to see 20 because I can narrow down to what I think your best shots are.
Right.
And we emailed back and forth. I mean, he was great with his time, you know, and it was weird. Like, he was one of the guys that got me into wanting to do this.
Right. Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Because does it simultaneously happen for you then? You're starting to get into the Dead and you're starting to see his photos and then you want to take photos? Is that what was going on?
Not even necessarily the Dead, just like, he's special. He does, you know, Dead and other things like that. But and maybe it was the just the work he's done.
Yeah.
So the people who got me interested in doing this is Jay Blakesberg, Randy Johnson, you know, the former pitcher who is an awesome photographer.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what he does, right?
Yep. Randy Bly from Lamb of God, another good photographer, but his more is like street photography and different, not necessarily
Nikki
concerts.
Six.
Nikki as well.
Nikki's shit is great.
Yeah.
Kind of dying Arbus vibe, you know what I mean? Yep.
And he's got a show coming up in October.
Does. Can't wait to see that.
Yeah, so I'll be at that. And then Jay and then Danny Clinch is another one. Who when I got his book, I felt, and I had been doing this for about a year, I felt like it, just seeing the angles he took and his approach, it improved what I did, even if it's not going to be anywhere near the quality. It just, it gave me like a new way to look at the way I shoot.
Yeah. Kind of, to me, it feels like photography for you is like comedy for me. Do you feel like you found something like, oh, this is, I got a purpose in life now?
Yeah.
You're not fucking a bank teller. You're not some stupid, you know, Guitar Center, you know, corporate dude.
Right.
You're out in the world. You're mingling with people and you're doing art, man. That photos are art. And it's some of my favorite shit in my life is rock photos. You can't tell in this house because I keep thinking I'm not going to stay here forever. And I've already been here a year and a half. But if you see my collection, it is absurd what I've got, you know? And my old house was mind-boggling. And all of them when I would wake up in the morning, I would shower or whatever and get shit going. And I would look at key photos, not like get up, I'm going to go look at that photo. One would just grab me and I'd just look at it for a good 5 minutes. Like, fuck, man, look at that. You know what I mean? And yep. They're just alive in my house. These photos are fucking alive. There's some Garcia stuff, dead stuff from that Wall of Sound era. That, like you see in the documentary, one of the greatest photos I think of all time, and I just recently have been worshiping it, is that one from the Haight Street Fair.
Yeah,
where it's shot behind the drums. Jerry's turned and he's looking at
and
the
just
camera.
A sea of people.
It's just a sea of people. Yeah. Look at, I got goosebumps thinking about that fucking photo, man. That photo and all, there's so many rock photos that are legendary, you know, legendary. And there's tons of fucking great dudes out there, you know. I think a lot of dudes, and this is a key thing you got to watch out for, is they burn out. They shoot for years and years, and they're like, I'm good, you know.
Yeah.
But all photos are great. Ansel Adams, that shit, I grew up in Yosemite. I was born there. You know, whatever your subject is, motorcycles, yep. You know, I've seen some fucking guys that shoot choppers from Sturges over the years. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
Anything that tells a story.
Exactly. And that's what you want it to do. And that's what I try to do is get the shot that they're not getting, because that's what will make it stand out. And that's what will be memorable when you're thinking about a show or the shows I've shot. You know, I can go through and pick, you know, shots from every show and be like, this was the one that I haven't seen anyone else get,
yep.
You know? And so for Jay, it was weird, you know, emailing him in October of 2015 and then being shoulder to shoulder with him in April of 2016 in a pit together shooting.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right?
And
he's just got that access, dude.
Exactly.
He's
like Ross. And that's what you need.
He's like Ross with Metallica.
Yep.
Jay is he's on the drum kit.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? He's like the eighth member or whatever. Right. You know, he's up there behind Mickey Hart just shooting fucking his drums and shit. I'm like, yeah, man. He's a great guy, too. Really fucking nice dude, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, when you got a guy back then that has full access and 100% Ross Halfen with Metallica, that guy has seen shit that he will never talk about. But I'm talking early days of drugs. I had Mick on, you know?
He's got some stories.
He's got some stories. Yeah. And what's great about him is he was one of the members of any band he is with.
Yeah.
And his cocaine lifestyle is just incredible to think about how he was a rock and roll photographer. You know, he's just traveling with like Bowie and you know, Joan Jett and all these people in the radical era, you know.
Yeah.
But imagine Jay rolling with the dead when Jerry's just fucking strung out and fried. You know, you walk in, he's just nodded off. You're like, hey, Jerry. Oh, fuck, you're not here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And especially like even with those dudes following all the grunge bands back in the day and just how radical that had to be, you know?
Yep.
It's definitely an interesting game. It's cool that you're into it, man. And you going to ever shoot anything but live concerts? Like, you know,
I'm open to shooting anything. Like I said, I work with some bands, and if they want to do like behind the scenes or portraits and stuff like that, I can definitely do that.
Right.
I just feel like what I'm here to do is shoot concerts.
Yep.
You know, and that's what
great.
I feel I excel at.
You got a great one of me.
Yeah.
With that fucking star
awesome.
Jacket on and shit, you know? Yeah, that was a fucking good night, huh?
That was a great time.
Yeah.
You know, and I was glad I was able to get it. But again, it's like I want to capture like that moment of you rocking and like, you know, pointing out to the crowd. And so you can tell there was energy there.
Yeah. Just right there. You can tell I'm like, I want to rock.
Yeah.
That's the fucking song I sing. It.
Yeah.
It's great. Well, fuck, man. I'm glad you did the show. Super cool. It's great to hear, have photographers on in all different levels. Guys, you know, like the biggest. I've had some of the greatest photographers
on here.
And I just fucking worship them, you know, and beyond. You know, to me, they mean so much to me because their photos have just made me completely happy, as you can tell how they're hung up in here. But you know what I mean. Let's tell everybody where your website is again, one more time.
It's steverosephotos.com.
And you got an Instagram.
Instagram is steve_rose.
Yep. And then Twitter or anything?
Steve Rose Photos.
Yeah. And then if people want to get a hold of you to shoot them or anything live?
They can contact me through the website or, you know, Twitter, message me.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Badass. And thanks, man. And yeah, dude, it was cool to have
thanks,
you on.
Man.
Definitely.
Appreciate
it. You know, because it's like I've seen some of your work and I love it. By the way, if you guys are big Cornell fans, he and I went to Temple of the Dog, and he shot the iconic show that I talked about at the Forum, and it's definitely some great photos, and definitely one to have in your house, because that, to me, is the last of the greatest Cornell shows of all time. Of course, yeah. Soundgarden, he passed when Soundgarden was on tour, but these... I think it was 8 or 13 shows they did, and everybody thought they were going to do more. And I was like, how is not the whole planet at these shows?
Yeah.
They were all sold out, of course, but still, the level of, you know, the magnitude of how rare that was going to be, I don't think really sunk with people.
Yep.
And once I saw that show and I walked out of there and saw the 3.5 hours they put into that, and now I got a photo from me, and it's like, fuck, man. And when I look at that photo, I go, the stage was cool because it just looked like an old fucking shipyard, like a dock.
Yep.
It was so weird, man. Yeah. It was the weirdest setup I've ever seen. I loved it.
Yeah.
It just felt like a scene from On the Waterfront.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? These guys are out there, you know, and they're murdering. Like Achilles' Last Stand.
Yep.
That shit is fucking epic, man. So go see his website and check out his photos, man. Thanks for doing the show.
Thank you.
Candles lit, everybody. See you later.